Srila Prabhupada ki.
Yes.
Sri Bhakti Vaibhava ki.
Yes.
Granta Raja, Srimad Bhagavatam ki.
Yes.
Giriraj Maharaj ki.
Yes.
Jai Nitai Go Premanandi. Okay. So we'll just discuss this section in the Bhagavatam. And see if any more students come. That's it. What did we discuss in our previous class? More coming. Thank you all for coming. Okay. We'll see if a few more come. Two more people come. So what did we discuss in the previous class?
The child develops in the womb, which man is what develops.
That's good. Any other points?
The material world is full of misery, and it starts when the child enters into the womb itself.
Mm. Yeah, we'll hear more about that tonight also, that point. Any other points?
The first service to the spiritual master is to bring up the family and the children in a Krishna conscious way, and then the preaching becomes most effective.
Hmm. Yeah, good. Important point. Anything else?
There is a great suffering of the child in the womb. Hmm. And if during the birth, he suffers so much pain that she loses his sense of breathing, and he forgets everything after
taking birth. Yeah, we'll hear more about that tonight also.
Mayavadins put more emphasis on the Srutis rather than the Smritis of the Vedas, whereas Sri Guru Goswami says that Smritis are more important than Srutis. Hmm.
Because they explain the purports of the Vedas.
Vedic astrology describes the anatomy of how the child was born and everything thousands and thousands of millions of years ago, and now this is being discussed, as you mentioned, about Leonardo da Vinci coming up with opening up the body first ever in just a few hundred years, and they are trying to sort of tell us exactly what was written in the Shastras long ago. Mm.
Just confirming everything that was already there.
Yeah.
I was watching a documentary on the childbirth. So there were a few scientists and doctors who were interviewed, and they saw the process of childbirth. So one of the French doctors, he said that, you know, out of the experience and use of the equipment, we know that what's going on inside, but science doesn't know how exactly child develops inside and how it forms. So even today, so science doesn't know what's being described in the Bible.
That's true.
So I'm just wondering that how can a child remember the previous 100 births in just 2 months?
Yeah, from 7 months onwards.
Yeah. So from the 7 month to the 9 month, 2 month period is a very short period. How is it able to go through the 100 births?
No, it means he can remember previous lives. Mm-hmm. Like that.
The Supreme Soul reminds you? The Supreme Soul reminds you. Mm-hmm. If you use a miracle.
But the proportionality of the time, you know, the 2 months result is 100 births.
But was it said
that... It doesn't mean that he's thinking of every detail and every birth. It just means generally. You know, he may understand that, you know, I died like this in different births, and, you know, major points. Doesn't mean like every single detail. That's it.
So Lord Krishna knows everything, so he can handle that.
Another point?
He says that at that time, if the child is fortunate, he can remember all the troubles of his past 100 births, not everyone.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like I said, I mean, it's just in general, like that. Doesn't mean every detail of every, you know, I had a cup of coffee at Lygon Street and then, you know, doesn't mean all those things. Just means like important situations like that.
Just curious on that point, when the child remembers all these events of the past lives, so he thinks in the mind, but how come he forgets the moment he comes out?
Prabhupada will explain that tonight. That's in this section that we're going to go through tonight. Prabhupada answers that. Any other points? Okay, so we'll continue going from verse 11 to 21. So far we heard in the beginning of chapter 29 that Devahuti, she was asking three questions to Kapila Dev. Please explain to me about devotional service, about the suffering of birth and death in this material world, and about the time factor. So in chapter 29, Kapila Dev elaborated upon devotional service, both mixed devotional service and pure devotional service. And now in chapter 30, he described the reaction that the living entity has by performing adverse materialistic activities or adverse fruitive activities. It means ugrakama, vikama, inauspicious activities, and how the soul suffers and how it becomes further and further bound in this world and how it becomes punished by Yamaraj and so forth like that. Now, after going through all those hellish births, he then had the opportunity to come back to the human form of life, and that's where chapter 31 begins, describing how the soul is born once again into the womb of a human mother and begins to develop over the 9-month period and the consciousness which takes place. So we saw in verses 1 to 10 what was actually taking place within the womb in those 9 months. And now we'll hear from verses 11 to 21 how the soul prays to the Lord within the womb and the type of prayers that the soul offers to the Lord in the womb in the final 2 months of his period within the womb. He becomes conscious at the age of 7 months. Between 7 and 9 months he has consciousness like that.
Are the agonies of the birth even the devotee has to go through if he... So when the devotee is born?
Yeah. Prabhupada will explain it tonight in this section. He explains that different different living entities have different experiences in the womb according to their consciousness, according to their position in terms of being a devotee or a non-devotee like that. So Prabhupada elaborates upon that point. Text 11. The living entity in this forgetful condition of life, bound by 7 layers of material ingredients, prays with folded hands, appealing to the Lord who has put him in that condition. Such a problem we like to read.
It is said that when a woman is having labor pain, she promises that she will never again become pregnant and suffer from such a severely painful condition. Similarly, when one is undergoing some surgical operation, he promises that he will never again act in such a way as to become diseased and have to undergo medical surgery. Or when one falls into danger, he promises that he will never again make the same mistake. Similarly, the living entity, when put into the hellish condition of life, prays to the Lord that he will never again commit sinful activities and have to be put into the womb for repeated birth and death. In the hellish condition, within the womb, the living entity is very much afraid of being born again. But when he is out of the womb, when he is in the full life and good health, he forgets everything and commits again and again the same sins for which he was put into that horrible condition of existence.
So what are the points which Prabhupada makes here?
soon as one forgets his miserable condition, again he gets into the pleasure of Maya, and again he tries to enjoy. But again he gets frustrated by it because he's not able to enjoy. And again he tries to think, okay, I'm not here to enjoy. But again, when he gets an opportunity, then he falls down. It keeps on going in the circle of Maya.
Complicated situation.
It is said, Punarapi Janni Yatrashenam Trai Malare Trai Malare. When the soul is coming out of the womb, he says, please forgive me, I don't want to go back again into the womb. But as soon as he is born, as he said, he forgets everything. Happy birthday. And just wants to enjoy.
If the soul is meant to forget the miseries, then how can he be expected to improve upon his sinful condition? The super soul takes away that, you know, the remembrance of the soul cannot be really then. He has just suffered. As soon as he's out, he has just suffered.
Depends on the type of living entity. We'll see as we go through this section that Prabhupada elaborates on the different types of living entities and how they have different reactions and so forth in the womb and also when they came out of the womb. And that Jiva Goswami explains this, it's not that every living entity is the same. They're all different. So some are conditioned souls, some are devotees, some are very sinful living entities. So according to what their consciousness is, they'll have different experiences in the womb and also when they come out of the womb also.
Also, there is a song, Vidyatmaga, I think it's by Narottama, in which he explains like how in the womb, in the seventh month, Lord appears in front of him and he begs to the Lord, and Lord gives him mercy and says, like, if you remember me always, you won't ever take birth. But as soon as he is born, he is controlled by the Maya and looking at all the relatives and all the family members who affectionately give him so much of love, he again forgets the Lord. So that song explains how
the
person forgets,
that's when
it comes out.
Bhakti Vinod Thakur. Yeah. Yeah, same. So we see here the nature of the material world is that when one is enjoying, then generally one forgets the Lord. That's the nature of the conditioned soul. When one is suffering, it's easier to remember Krishna, because you don't have so much choice, because you're suffering. So naturally you'll take shelter. Not always, but it's natural, quite natural, that people take shelter of God, of Krishna, when they're suffering. But when that suffering is ceased for a period of time, then that cessation of suffering, which we call enjoyment in the material world, then people forget Krishna. And we see that's what takes place. As soon as there's some cessation of the suffering, and we're not suffering so much, then we may not become as serious in our Krishna consciousness. But as soon as we're suffering, then immediately we become more serious again. And then when the suffering disappears, then we become less serious. And when we're suffering more, then... So that is the nature of the conditioned soul. So therefore it is said, Prabhupada explains in the purport, that in the womb, so many prayers are said and so many thoughts are made, so forth. But as soon as someone comes out, the power of the material energy is that it can cover the consciousness of the living entity. And then he thinks it is not so bad here. Especially when one is a child, because one is young and one gets so much attention like that, and there's so many relatives, especially in the old days in India. You go to India and then there are the whole village is there. And the child is getting so much affection and so forth. Then he doesn't think, well, it's not so bad. I don't mind it here. And then he thinks, well, it's not so bad, then I'll forget about what I said to Krishna within the womb. And then he becomes more absorbed once again in Maya, in the material energy. So it's the nature of the material energy. It's very powerful and it has the ability to make us forget Krishna. Of that. That is the duty of the material energy, to make us forget Krishna. It has the throwing potency and the covering potency. So when we're trying to get out of the material world, the material energy throws us back or pulls us down, right? And for most of the living entities in the material world, they're just covered. They're complacent. They don't even know that they're covered by the material energy. They're just sleeping very happily on the lap of the witch called Maya. So that is the nature of the material world. But for those who are a little intelligent, they try to get out. And devotees, we have to be diligent And as a devotee becomes more advanced, they become more serious in Krishna consciousness. And they become experienced with the material world. They realize that the suffering is temporary, but the happiness is also temporary. So they don't become so complacent in their attempt to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. So this is the sign of a serious devotee. He doesn't fluctuate so much. Matra spasha stukunti shitoshna sukunduka. Krishna says, do not become bewildered by these changes. Non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress. Titikshaswa bharata. Which means become tolerant. Just tolerate. Understand this is happiness, it will pass. This is distress, it will pass. Right? And focus on Krishna. That's advancement in Krishna consciousness. So, any points here?
It's not clear whether he forgets or he's coming in touch with the Maya. He decides to actually forget, or that remembrance of, you know, the suffering is withdrawn from him and he becomes covered by the Maya. This looks like that the child, when he comes out of the womb, has a very mature mentality. He's able to forget, he's able to analyze that there is, you know, a lot of enjoyment outside.
Yes, some living entities. It's not all living entities go through this, but some will go through this. The point which the Bhagavatam is making is that Maya is very powerful, and even for someone who may be serious in spiritual life, they can become deviated by Maya. That's the potency of Maya. Just like we may have done this when we were in the womb, but then we came out, and for many years in our childhood, we forgot. And we're not necessarily attracted to spiritual life, but then something woke us up again in the future, and then we took up again. But that's the potency of Maya. But do we want to keep going through this again and again and again, just making mediocre advancement? You know, just making, we're making advancement in Krishna consciousness, but not so seriously. So we just make a, you know, type of advancement, but then we go through the same pattern again, having to take birth again, becoming forgetful again, and then maybe taking up again. But if one who is very advanced, very serious, he will not become distracted by all of these material situations, and he'll become very fixed in Krishna consciousness. So. Okay.
Last one, 7 days of the material ingredients.
Yeah.
We learned with the creation then.
Prabhupada mentions them in the previous section. Is that what you're asking? What they are?
The 7 layers.
Is that what you're asking? What they are?
Yeah.
They're in the previous section. Oh yeah, verse 4. Within 4 months from the date of conception, the 7 essential ingredients of the body, namely child, blood, flesh, fat, bone, marrow, and semen, come into existence. Okay. So that's them. Okay. The human soul says, I take shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is the soul within the womb beginning to pray to the Lord. This is the first of the prayers. The human soul says, I take shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who appears in his various eternal forms and walks on the surface of the world. I take shelter of him only because he can give me relief from all fear, and from him I have received this condition of life, which is just befitting my impious activities. So he prays to the Lord. Prabhupada explains in the purport that the Lord walks within this material world. He actually comes into this material world. This is the purport or the emphasis which the Bhagavatam gives, Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam, God is a personality, he's Bhagavan. So Krishna comes into this material world, he walks amongst human beings as Lord Ramachandra, as Lord Krishna, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And in these different incarnations, then he spreads religious principles. Right? He destroys impious living entities. He delivers the pious living entities. Mm-hmm. So the living entity within the womb becomes Krishna conscious. He remembers the Lord in his personal form. He begins to pray to the Lord in his personal form. But then the danger is of Maya is that when he comes out, he forgets all this. Forgets that God is a person, forgets that the duty of his life was that he would surrender to Krishna. This is the power of the material energy. Prabhupada said that if I have one criticism of my disciples, they did not take Maya seriously enough. So that is the point, that we must always take Maya seriously as devotees, because Maya can take us at any time. None of us are impervious to the effects of Maya. It's not that we can't fall down. It's not that we can't become non-devotees. It's not that we can't lose our Krishna consciousness. It's not that we can't reject devotional activities and take up material activities again. Maya is very powerful. Jana shangas chalo yamcha shabir bhaktir vinashati. That Rupa Goswami says that jana sangash means materialistic association. It's very powerful. Just like at the farm, we don't have any television, we don't have any radio. I don't know what's going on in the world. Just shut off from the world. And then as I drive back to Melbourne each week, and then I come through Geelong, and then I see, you look through people's windows as you're driving down the road, and you see televisions, the lights of the televisions on. But this is all jana sangash. It is materialist association, and it contaminates the consciousness. And by the contamination of this materialistic association, one can forget Krishna. Even a devotee can forget Krishna. Just like on Saturday, we celebrated Baladev Purnima, the appearance day of Lord Balaram. So in the pastime of Lord Balaram, Lord Balaram had to fight with one demon whose name was Dvivida. This demon Dvivida was in the form of a monkey, a gorilla. He was actually, Radhana Swami was telling the pastime, he was actually an associate of Ramachandra, Dvivida. He was actually a devotee. But his defect was, even though he was a devotee of Ram, he was envious of Lakshman. And as Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains in the beginning of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, if you are a devotee of Mahaprabhu but you're rejecting Jananda Prabhu, then you'll never be accepted by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If you're a devotee of Krishna but you reject Balaram, you'll never be accepted by Krishna. If you're a devotee of Ramachandra but you reject Lakshman, you'll never be accepted by Ramachandra. That is the principle. So there was some aparad there. And because of that aparad, he fell into the association of other demons. And then by their association, he also developed, he was a devotee, but he became overwhelmed by their association, and he developed demoniac consciousness. And then when Lord Balaram appeared, he came and tried to steal Lord Balaram's gopis during Lord Balaram's Rasa Lila. Right? And Balaram chastised him and killed him, punished him. So this is the effect of materialistic association. It is dangerous. And devotees must also always be on guard. Maya only needs one inch. She comes in like a needle, but out like a plow. Right? She's very subtle. She only comes in very subtly, but then she can take you away from Krishna. A great, great distance away. So devotees should always be uncompromising with Maya. Do not make compromises, because as soon as you compromise, she will take advantage and she will pull you away from Krishna. That is her potency. Don't underestimate her, and don't think that she is not a formidable enemy. She's much more powerful than us. Maya is far more powerful than we are. The devotee should realize this. Mama Maya Dharachaya. Krishna says is my energy. My Maya. Don't think that you are more powerful than God's energy. You're not more powerful than God's energy. Yeah? God's energy is much more powerful than we are. So we should not become
complacent.
Yeah. Should not think that we can. We're more powerful than Maya. The devotee may become proud, may think, now I'm doing so well as a devotee. But then the next morning, Krishna will make you humble again. Again, become a mouse. Think you are very high again. So do not underestimate. So living entity goes into the womb and begins to pray to Krishna. Krishna, please save me. I'm in a very precarious situation. Any points?
We really don't know when the fire enters. We don't know that we're in fire.
Maybe. A devotee should know. A devotee should be intelligent and should have the buddhi or the intelligence to understand when Maya is trying to trick. When you become more expert, then you become more experienced in seeing Maya's different attempts at trying to make us leave devotional service.
Even the demon can so also
pray like this? No, demons don't pray like this. This is a devotee prayer. Jiva Goswami explains in this section that it's describing that the soul is within the womb suffering, and then there are these prayers. So it is not that every soul is praying like this. This is only the devotee who prays like this. Most of the non-devotees, when they're in the womb, they don't pray like this. They don't remember Krishna in this way. But very fortunate souls, Bhagyabhana Jeev, or very fortunate souls, they remember Krishna in the womb and they make these prayers. So this is a devotee offering prayers. It's not that every living entity within the womb prays like this, right? It's just the devotee who is praying like this. And even amongst the devotees, then it describes that when they pray like this, but then they come out and they forget. So that's a less serious devotee. A more serious devotee will not forget. He'll take Krishna consciousness from his childhood. Like that. More serious. I, the pure soul, now bound by my activities, am lying in the womb of my mother by the arrangement of Maya. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him who is also here with me, but who is unaffected and changeless. He is unlimited, but he is perceived in the repentant heart. To him I offer my respectful obeisances. So, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, Krishna accompanies every living entity throughout every birth they take in the material world. That means this is the nature of true friendship. A real friend means that no matter what birth you take, he is there with you. Who will stick with you all that time? He will go at every single birth you take with you. And he is there with you constantly. And he is always waiting for you to turn back to him in consciousness. So this is why Krishna is Suridam Sarvabhutanam. He is the most dear friend of every living entity. Because he accompanies every living entity and he is simply waiting for every living entity to become repentant. Because only when one becomes repentant, or when one is remorseful, or when one is sorry for all of the improper things that one has done in so many lifetimes in the material world, does one begin to pray to Krishna. Prabhupada explains this in the purport. You cannot pray to Krishna seriously or sincerely until you become repentant. One must be very sorry, very remorseful within the heart. I have committed so many sinful activities. I've done so much nonsense. And even as devotees, this is when we make advancement, when we become a little bit introspective and a little bit humble. And we think that I've done so much nonsense. I'm not a good devotee. And Krishna, please forgive me. And Krishna, please accept me. And when we have that kind of consciousness, that's when we make advancement. Right? As long as we think we are very great, then you are fallen. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, as soon as you think you are great, immediately you are fallen. That is the nature of a devotee. So a devotee's consciousness is that he's repentant. He always feels very grateful to Krishna. And Prabhupada explains that we should feel grateful to Krishna, because who is a better friend than Krishna, factually speaking? Sometimes we think, Krishna, why are you not with us? But Krishna is always with us. Krishna is in our... He's sitting next to us in our heart at all times, eternally. Krishna never leaves us. He's always with us, but we just forget him. That's the point. So Krishna is the best of our friends, and he is waiting there for us to surrender to him once again. But we have to become repentant. When we think that now I've done so many nonsense activities, Krishna, please forgive me and please accept me, then we can approach Krishna once again and we can go back to the spiritual world. Any points? Okay. I am separated from the Supreme Lord because of my being in this material body, which is made of five elements, and therefore my qualities and senses are being misused. Although I am essentially spiritual, because the Supreme Personality of Godhead is transcendental to material nature and the living entities, because he is devoid of such a material body, and because he is always glorious in his spiritual qualities, I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. So Krishna can never be influenced by the material energy. The living entity, the Tatashta Shakti, the Jivas, they can be influenced by Maya. Krishna can never be influenced by Maya because he is the controller of Maya. So therefore, because he controls Maya, he is never under her influence. Whereas all of us can be influenced by Maya, it is possible. At this point in time, we are in Maya. Prabhupada said, we must fear Maya. You cannot fear Maya unless you realize you're in Maya. Just like we've told the story that Prabhupada was walking on the beach in Juhu with Giriraj Maharaj and some other devotees. And Giriraj Maharaj said to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, I'm sorry, I was in Maya. And Prabhupada stamped his cane into the sand. He said, you are always in Maya. And he walked off. And Giriraj Maharaj was so much taken aback, he paid his obeisances to Prabhupada and then began to follow after him. So we're always in Maya. We should never think that, you know, sometimes devotees say all sorts of silly things. You know, that's like we talk about Indra. Oh, Indra, he felt, you know, he was Maya and he committed this offence to Krishna. Indra is more of a devotee than we are. You know, we criticise and we judge and we make statements about other devotees, but we don't understand we're always in Maya. As long as you think you're the body, you're in Maya. As long as you have some upadi or material designation, you're in Maya, that which is not. So then how can we make these judgments? Oh, this devotee's in Maya, that devotee's in Maya, and this devotee does all these things wrong, and, you know, make so many judgments, don't understand our position. What is our position? So we have to understand what is the situation. Krishna appears, he says in the Bhagavad Gita, Atma Maya. Krishna appears by his own internal potency. He's not controlled. When he comes into the material world, he's not forced to take birth. We are forced to take birth. We did not choose to be here now. Right? We didn't choose this body. We were forced into this body by our karma, like that, by our material desires, by the material energy, under the direction of the super soul. Whereas Krishna is not influenced by the material energy. He is aloof. If he appears, he simply appears by his divine will to perform lilas and to attract the living entities back to the spiritual world. That's his main reason for appearing.
How do we understand this? He comes by his own internal potency. That means the eternal potential is sending him, or how do we understand this?
No, it means that when it comes, it's within the internal potency. In other words, Krishna doesn't touch the material energy. Just like when we come in the material world, we have to accept the material body. But Krishna appears in his self-same spiritual form, and he brings his associates with him, and under the influence of the internal potency, he brings his holy dharma, and he performs his pastimes, right? As if in the material world, but actually he is aloof from the material world. Like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right. Any other points? The human soul further prays, the living entity is put under the influence of material nature and continues a hard struggle for existence on the path of repeated birth and death. This conditional life is due to his forgetfulness of his relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, without the Lord's mercy, how can he again engage in the transcendental loving service of the Lord? I guess you'll have to read it.
The Mayavadi philosophers say that simply by cultivation of knowledge, by mental speculation, one can be liberated from the condition of material bondage. But here it is said, one is liberated not by knowledge, but by the mercy of the Supreme Lord. The knowledge of the conditioned soul gained by mental speculation, however powerful it may be, is always too imperfect to approach the absolute truth. It is said that without the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one cannot understand him or his actual form, quality and name. Those who are not in devotional service go on speculating for many, many thousands of years, but they are still unable to understand the nature of the Absolute Truth. One can be liberated in the knowledge of the Absolute Truth simply by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of God.
We'll stop there. Okay, so what were the points here?
The main point Prabhupada is saying, one is liberated not by knowledge, but by the mercy of the Lord. Unless you get the mercy of the Lord, you can never be. Mayavadis say that by knowledge you can be liberated. Is completely wrong.
It means by knowledge you can attain Brahman realization, that's the point. But as Prabhupada points out, you can't understand Bhagavan. You cannot understand the personality of Godhead simply by jnana. Yeah. Simply by jnana or by knowledge, spiritual knowledge. You can study the Vedas, but you cannot realize the absolute truth. In other words, it requires mercy and then the knowledge comes to life. It is not that we do not need knowledge. We need knowledge. That's why we're studying the Bhagavad Gita. But that knowledge only becomes full of life when we surrender to Krishna or when there's bhakti. When one has devotion, then that knowledge becomes infused with that devotion. And then one gets realizations of God's form. One realizes God's personality. And then one can become a devotee or surrender to God, to surrender to Krishna. But we cannot understand his personality until we surrender to him properly. So therefore one must have a devotional attitude. You can not have knowledge without bhakti. Or in other words, you can't just, as Prabhupada said, be an armchair speculator. You can't just read the books and accumulate knowledge but not do any service. Right? There has to be a balance between both. You have to do sadhana and service. Right? You have to study the books very deeply, because if you don't study, if you don't get knowledge, if you're not doing shravanam, hearing, then you cannot become attached to Krishna. You will not realize Krishna. You will not understand Krishna. How can you become attracted to Krishna if you know nothing about him? The more you know about Krishna, the more you become attracted to Krishna. So therefore you need knowledge of Krishna. But if that knowledge is devoid of devotion, then that knowledge will be dry. It won't attract us fully to Krishna, because it means that there has to be devotion in order to understand the knowledge. In other words, there has to be a service mentality. One has to do practical service. If one does practical service, if one has a service attitude, a devotional attitude, then the knowledge comes to life. Otherwise you can't understand Krishna. So it's not possible, just by knowledge. One has to get Krishna's mercy. Prabhupada says, without Krishna's mercy, you can't understand this knowledge. How do you get Krishna's mercy? You have to have bhakti, or devotional attitude. Krishna says, bhaktya mama bijanati yavanyas chasmi tatvataha. You can understand me in truth through devotion. Without devotion, you can't understand.
In order to get the devotional
service,
do we still need the mercy of Krishna?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Without his mercy, we can't really even do devotional service.
You can't get decision. Without his mercy, you can't even get decision.
Get the
association of the devotee. We can't.
Yeah, ultimately it begins with Krishna's mercy. This will be explained by Prabhupada in the next few purports what this means. How does Krishna show his mercy? We say, oh, Krishna's mercy, Krishna's mercy. What does Krishna's mercy mean? It's something practical. Just like sometimes devotees say, you know, you hear devotees say to another devotee, oh Prabhu, give me your mercy, give me your mercy. So what does that mean? What are they saying? What are they asking for?
Give me instructions.
That's what they should be asking for, yeah. But say, give me your mercy. Yeah, what's your mercy? What does it mean? You know, you just, here's my mercy. Yeah. Mercy. Is that what it means? It's not something like that, but it means actually giving, when a devotee asks another devotee for mercy, it means they're asking for instructions or an opportunity for service. That's what it means. Something practical. And by doing something practical, then you advance in Krishna consciousness.
In Leelamrita, so many times it has been told that Prabhupada was traveling on the train and so many people are coming just asking for mercy. Mm. How can they get mercy without service?
Yeah, one man, he said on the train to Prabhupada, he said, give me your mercy, and Prabhupada said, give me your son. He said, give me your son. Because I think he had two sons. Prabhupada said, give me one of your sons. The man would not follow. He said, no, he kept saying to Prabhupada, give me your mercy, give me your mercy. Like that. So what does that mean? It means if you want Krishna's mercy, then you have to have a practical attitude of surrender. Right? You say, Krishna, give me your mercy, then, yeah, but what do you do for Krishna? That's the point. You say, Krishna, give me mercy. No, devotee doesn't do just things. Krishna, I will serve you. Radharani says, Mahaprabhu says, whether you handle me roughly or make me broken hearted, still you are my Lord. So the devotee just does service and then he relies on Krishna, and Krishna is merciful, that's his nature. But the point is, devotee, what are we doing on our side? Like that. Sometimes devotees say, oh, you know, I need mercy, you know, when I get the mercy, but what are you doing? Are you doing anything practical? Sometimes devotees just talk all the time, oh, I want mercy, what's mercy? Mercy means you do something for Krishna, automatically mercy will be there. Krishna is merciful, that's not the problem. The problem is whether or not we are surrendered. That's really the point. If we're surrendered, then Krishna will naturally lift us up. Is this making sense? Yeah. No one other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the localized Paramatma, the partial representation of the Lord, is directing all inanimate and animate objects. He is present in the three phases of time, past, present and future. Therefore, the conditioned soul is engaged in different activities by his direction, and in order to get free from the threefold miseries of this conditional life, we have to surrender unto him only. Okay, so we'll read the Chaitanya Prabhu. Can you read the second paragraph?
This knowledge cannot be imparted by anyone other than the Supreme Lord or his representative.
In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya instructs Rupa Goswami that the living entities wander in life after life, undergoing the miserable conditions of material existence. But when one is very anxious to get free from the material entanglement, he gets enlightenment through the spiritual master and Krishna. This means that Krishna as a super soul is seated within the heart of the living entity, and when the living entity is serious, the Lord directs him to take shelter of his representative, a bona fide spiritual master. Directed from within and guided externally by the spiritual master, one attains the path of Krishna consciousness, which is the way out of material difficulties.
So what are the points in this?
Brahman Brahmitri Kon Bhagavan Ji Guru Krishna Prasantai Mithi Edward Gomez.
Who speaks that verse?
Chaitanya.
Who to?
Himself. To, I think,
Rupa Goswami. Yeah. Chaitanya Charitamrita. Like this. Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavanaji. Bhagyavanaji means a fortunate soul. Brahmanda Brahmite means traveling throughout the universe on the samsara chakra. Continuously, higher birth and then lower birth. Continuously, we travel around the universe taking different births and different species of life. But then, Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavanaji, Guru Krishna Prasade by Bhakti Lata Beej. One receives the Bhakti Lata Beej by the mercy of Guru and Krishna. So, how does one take up devotional service? One takes up devotional service when he comes in contact with a devotee. Without the association of devotees, you never take up devotional service. This is called kripaya. Kripa means mercy, right? How does mercy come? Mercy comes through meeting a devotee. That's why it is necessary for the devotees to preach Krishna consciousness, because the living entities are traveling throughout the samsara chakra, throughout the material world, transmigrating through the different bodies, different species of life. But then by some good fortune, he becomes a Bhagyavan Jiva, or a fortunate soul, when he comes in contact with a devotee. And the devotee, who has this bhakti shakti, or this potency of devotion coming from the Lord himself, then from that devotion, when he comes in contact with that devotee, then he also becomes attracted to devotional service. His devotional service is reawakened, because the devotee engages him in devotional service. He gives him the holy name, he gives him a book, he gives him prasad. And that way that soul becomes fortunate soul, and Krishna consciousness is once again awoken after many thousands of lifetimes. So that is the necessity of preaching Krishna consciousness. Just like devotees said to Prabhupada one time, Prabhupada, how did we become fortunate that we came to get in contact with you? And Prabhupada said, I created your good fortune. Because Prabhupada travelled throughout the world and created good fortune and sent his devotees. Just like in the early days of ISKCON, just like Prabhupada Vishnu Swami, he joined the temple in Berry Place in London. And after 3 days, he was sent to open a temple in Wales. After 3 days of being in, 3 days of being a devotee, just walked into the temple. Right? The first day he walked into the temple, the devotee said, would you like to give a donation?
There was
in Berry Place in London. Like that. So the devotee, Prabhu Vishnu Swami, walked into the temple. The devotee said, would you like to give a donation? He pulled out his wallet and he gave him his wallet. Had 70, 80 pounds in it, like that. Just said, yeah, like that. And just joined immediately. And then after 3 days, he was sent to go and open a temple to preach with one other devotee. After 3 days. That's how Prabhupada would create the good fortune of the living entities. Right? He'd give Krishna consciousness, and then he'd say, now go and spread it somewhere else. In the early days, Veda Puri is reading Burujan Prabhu's book at the moment, My Glorious Master. And Prabhupada would say, one man is enough to open a new temple. One man is enough to open a new centre. Right? This is what it was like in the early days of ISKCON, early 70s in ISKCON. Prabhupada would just send one man, go. Yeah. Or like I heard Tamal Krishnamaraj, he was telling a story. The devotees were travelling through India with Prabhupada on the train, 30 or 40 devotees, and the train would stop at some city on the way, like they're travelling from Bombay to Delhi or something on the train, and stop at one city, and you know the train stops for 10 or 15 minutes, everyone gets off and gets some drinks. And Prabhupada stopped at one city, and Prabhupada turned around to one of the Grihastha couples who was on the train. Prabhupada said, "Get off and start a temple." Right? So they got off with their bags, right, and waved to all the devotees, and the train went off, and that was it. Prabhupada said, "Start a temple." Right? That's how Prabhupada created the good fortune of the living entities.
Did they start a temple? Did they start a temple?
Probably. I don't know what happened, but. But that was Prabhupada's mood. This is how Prabhupada spread the movement. Right? So it is by the mercy of a devotee, a pure devotee, and by his representatives. And when you come in contact with those, with a devotee, then you become a fortunate soul. And then you can take up to devotional service like that. So Guru Krishna Prasadipai, it means now by the mercy of Krishna. You come in contact with Guru. The first person you meet, the person who brings you to Krishna consciousness is called your Vatma Pradakshika Guru. The person who brings you to Krishna consciousness. So by the mercy of Krishna, you come in contact with Guru. Right? And by the mercy of Guru, you are brought to Krishna. So this is the potency. This is how Krishna consciousness is spread. It is said, Guru Krishna Prasadipai Bhakti Lata Bij. And Bij means the seed of the creeper of devotion. So Prabhupada explains, Mahaprabhu explains, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema. This seed of devotion is already within the heart. It is not something which the devotee gives to you. It is already in your heart. But the spiritual master simply waters that seed. The devotees water that seed, and what was already there, that sprouts like that. Just like one time when Prabhupada arrived in one of the airports, the reporter said, "Why have you come to our country?" Prabhupada said, "I have come to teach you that which you have forgotten." It's not that Krishna consciousness is already there, but it needs to be manifested out. How does it come out? Shravanadi jal, by hearing and chanting, and by the water of hearing and chanting, then it manifests again. So then we preach Krishna consciousness, we preach and preach and preach, and gradually it will come again. That's it.
By Srila Prabhupada there and then after 3 days, and then Prabhupada left and never came back to Moscow. And he, today we have the largest congregation outside India because of that person.
We were lucky. Emperor Brendan from Sydney used to come to our place, preach to us almost every weekend with his Kartal and some friends.
What was his name?
Jairam.
I was talking to Jai Sachinandan Prabhu, and I spoke to him for about 15-20 minutes. He's coming to cook the midnight feast. So I asked him, I said, how are things going and all that? Because everything is perfect. If you want to make money, I've been to Fiji 2 years, I've been to Concord 2 years, and I've made money, and you know, but the one thing I really, really, really miss is the association of devotees. And he's saying there's no way in the world, anywhere, I mean, just he had such a realization that even looking at devotees purifies you. Just looking at them purifies you. What to speak of being with them. And he misses it so much. He says, money and everything is here, okay, good, fine, and you'll make money. But you never ever get the association, what you, and he's craving it, literally craving it. That's what he was saying, it really struck me. And it changed a few things in my life after having the realization he made.
Sometimes Krishna has to take us away from the devotees to make us appreciate the devotees. And then that increases our eagerness to associate with the devotees. Makes us more serious in Krishna consciousness.
Okay. I can see how Lord Krishna has taken you from here to preach in the farm. I can see that. Otherwise, you were so happy here. There was no point in your going. But Lord Krishna didn't. You had to go.
You know what the real reason is? The real reason is that it makes me more eager to have your association, because then I have to come all the way here to get your association every week. So Krishna has separated me from all of you, so then I become more eager to come here once again.
What are you giving?
Vice versa, we look forward to you having your association more than you.
That's your mercy upon me. I'm not doing much preaching down there. There's only kangaroos. Okay. Fallen into a pool of blood, stool and urine within the abdomen of his mother, his own body scorched by the mother's gastric fire, and the embodied soul, anxious to get out, counts his months and prays, "Oh my Lord, when shall I, a wretched soul, be released from this confinement?" So, Prabhupada mentions that many living entities are aborted and so forth. That the most sinful activity is to kill a child. It's the most sinful activity. And to commit an abortion before the child is even born is the most sinful activity. So, one who performs this activity, then he will be born again and again in the womb of the mother. He will not see the light of day. For many, many births, they will take birth. They'll never see the light of day. They'll just continually just be born from one womb to another womb to another womb. It's the most sinful activity. So Prabhupada points out in the second paragraph, he says that the Sanskrit word used here is kripana di, which means person of miserly intelligence. So Prabhupada points out that a kripana is one who gets the human form of life but does not use the value of the human form of life to attain Krishna consciousness. That is the most unfortunate situation. Whereas the most fortunate use of the human form of life is that you get born as a human being and use it to become Krishna conscious. But not only use it to become Krishna conscious, but you use it to instruct others how to become Krishna conscious. That is called brahmana. A brahmana means broad-minded. A brahmana does not think of himself, but he thinks of all living entities and how to elevate all living entities, and how to give Krishna consciousness to all living entities. So that is a brahmana. So that is the best use of the human form of life. To become Krishna conscious and to teach all other living entities how also to become Krishna conscious. My dear Lord, by your causeless mercy I am awakened to consciousness, although I am only 10 months old. For this causeless mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and friend of all fallen souls, there is no way to express my gratitude but to pray with folded hands. So Prabhupada says that within the womb, the child This is talking about, at this point, it's talking about a devotee child. The non-devotees don't pray like this. They don't have all this realization. Jiva Goswami says this is a devotee at this point. So the devotee, he prays. Sometimes you see the child in the womb in the ultrasound, right? And they're bent and they have their hands together. Very often in the prayer, like mudra, like that. So they're praying to the Lord. In the case of devotees, God-conscious people, praying to the Lord, like that. Now, Prabhupada points out that we may pray to the Lord that, please release me from the suffering. And then when I come out, I will be your devotee. Now, Prabhupada says that, okay, now that we have come out and we are devotees, now we have to repay our debt to Krishna. Right? And what is the best way to repay the debt?
To preach.
To preach Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada said, you cannot repay the debt to the Guru. He says, not possible. He said, if you want to try, then preach vigorously like me. Just as Prabhupada has done. We cannot repay Prabhupada, we cannot repay our Guru. But if we preach vigorously like them, then we can attempt to repay the debt. That is our obligation to Krishna, to Prabhupada, and to our Guru. The living entity is another type of body, in another type of body, sees only by instinct. He knows only the agreeable and disagreeable sense perceptions of that particular body. But I have a body in which I can control my senses and can understand my destination. Therefore, I offer my respectful obeisances to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by whom I have been blessed with this body, and by whose grace I can see him within and without. So as is being mentioned here, that one can only cultivate knowledge when one is sense controlled. That's why an animal cannot cultivate knowledge, because he doesn't have control of the senses. Just like when I was a boy, I had one dog, Rottweiler. So he was very strong. You know, there's like big dogs, like big, strong dog. He's very placid, he wasn't like aggressive, he's very placid, but he's very big, very strong. So one day there was a female Rottweiler, and she walked past, and he went crazy, because he had no control of his senses. So he saw this female Rottweiler, and immediately he was so disturbed, he just wanted to chase her. So I shouted at him, "You stay there." And then I brought him in, and I grabbed him, and I had to hold him. And I held him, and he was all he was thinking about. He had no control of his senses, just thinking about. So I had to hold him for 5 minutes, right, while they walked with the female away. So they walked with her like 1 kilometer. After 5 minutes, they walked 1 kilometer, like a long way away. So finally, I thought, right now, it must be okay. So I let go of him. As soon as I let go, he just ran. Right, and I had to run 5 minutes. After him, 5 minutes, like 1 kilometer, like from here to, you know, the aquatic center, like that. I had to run run from here to the aquatic center, you know, to get him and bring him all the way back. And when I got him back, I let go of him and he did it again. I had to run again. Right? No control of the senses. Right? And if a human being is like that, then that's what most human beings are like. Right? No control of the senses. Right, you see the men, you know, when the girls walk past, no control of the senses whatsoever. Right? So this is animal life. Right? You have the most valuable gift, but you are not using it for what it is meant for. It is the biggest waste. Therefore, it is said that one must use the human form of life for sense control. Tapasya, tapo divyam, pradama sokyam, Shudasa. If you want to understand spiritual truth or get spiritual realization or happiness, you must practice tapasya or sense control. You must get control of your senses. Because if you don't have control of your senses, you cannot cultivate knowledge. You can't realize Krishna unless you have control of your senses. If you are sense controlled, then you can understand Krishna. If you are not sense controlled, you cannot understand Krishna. It's as simple as that. Therefore, at the time of initiation, we take the vow to follow the regulative principles. No illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no... Because if you don't control yourself, you won't understand. Therefore, you're asked, control. Right? And if you practice control, and it takes time, and it takes effort, and it takes discipline, but if you stick at it, gradually you'll get control. Gradually. Right? To the point where you may get control. You may become a Goswami or a master of the senses. Then at that point, then you can begin to realize Krishna. But you can't realize Krishna unless the senses are under control. That's why no animal can understand. Right? That's why no human who is like an animal can understand. Right? You speak spiritual knowledge to someone who doesn't have control of the senses, they can't understand. Just like Prabhupada's godbrothers went to England for the first time to preach, and they met that Lord. What was his name? Lord Zeppelin, I think it was. And they said to him, he said to them, make me a Brahmana. And they said, yes, no intoxication, no illicit sex, no gambling, no meat eating. He said, impossible. So then, how can he make advancement? Krishna consciousness is not a cheap thing. It means that if you want Krishna, first you must control the senses. Mahaprabhu says when he's instructing Raghunath Das Goswami in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he said, one who is a servant of the belly, the tongue and the genitals, and is always chasing or has always been controlled by these three, can never attain Krishna. Vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jibra vegam, udara pasta vegam, etan vegam, yo vishaheta dirva, savam apimam pritivim sashishat. Rupa Goswami, first thing he says in Nectar of Instruction is, Upadesha Amrita, is that one must have control of the senses. Then one can advance in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, it's not possible. Therefore, my Lord, although I am living in a terrible condition, I do not wish to depart from my mother's abdomen to fall again into the blind well of materialistic life. Your external energy, called Deva Maya, at once captures the newly born child, and immediately false identification, which is the beginning of the cycle of continual birth and death, begins. So, one must become renounced. Because the living entity at this point is within the womb, and he is saying, if I come out, I'll become bewildered. But then what happens? You come out and you become bewildered. So the Prabhupada explains in the purport that real knowledge means to develop renunciation. You must become renounced. You must voluntarily accept tapasya or detachment from your material situation in this material world. Either forcibly or voluntarily. But it must become, detachment must be there. If you're not detached, you cannot advance or you cannot accept Krishna. You cannot understand your swarup or your liberated relationship with Krishna if you're attached to the aham mameti, to the material relationship you have in this world, and to the relationships that are based on this body. You think this is my wife, my child, my family, my brother, my sister, my mother, father, friends. All these attachments are so strong, but they, unless that we detach ourselves from them, either we're forced to or voluntarily we do it, then we cannot understand Krishna. You must become detached. But that means when you become detached, then you become attached to Krishna. And then you become attached to those personalities based on that relationship with Krishna. Okay, is my wife, my child, my brother, my mother, my father, my friend, but in relation to Krishna. That's how you see them. Otherwise, you cannot have such a deep relationship.
So you try to see basically your wife is called Sabgopi, like the servant of Radha and Krishna?
You have to read the prayers of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, because he was very responsible household personality, he is the Grihastha Acharya. But he says, Manasa Deho Geho. So he says that everything within this household, it belongs to you. I'm simply the caretaker. The wife, the children, everyone, they are your servants. Krishna, Yugala Kishore. And I'm simply their caretaker. I'm looking after them. So that's how we have to learn to see like that. Simply we're seeing they're all Krishna's servants. It's Krishna's home. It's Gaur Nitai's home. It's Giriraj's home. And simply everyone living in the home is the servant of. Aren't they? Just like, what is the name of your home?
I'm not naming it.
So that's, you have to name the home. Just like my ashram is called Sri Govardhan Seva Ashram. Not that. Because we have to learn, Burujan Prabhu is teaching us to identify everything as being Krishna's home. Yeah. So you have to have a name like that, because then you begin to identify. And then even in your speaking, just like Burujan Prabhu and Mother Jagatrini, they live in Gopinath Dham in Perth. So they never say it is our place, or they always say it's Gopinath Dham, it is Gopinath's place, you know, and they always refer to everything as being like that. Right? And that's how you transcend the consciousness of aham mameti, because we always say my house like that, but then if you learn to consciously say Gopinath's house, Gornitai's house, like that, Giriraj's house, right? And it changes the consciousness. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, I'm just the caretaker. Everyone in the house, it is your house, it is your family, I'm simply the servant, I'm the caretaker of everyone in the house. That is pure Krishna consciousness. Then you can become purified even from Grihastha life by Bhaktivinoda Thakur's mercy. Therefore, without being agitated any more, I shall deliver myself from the darkness of nescience with the help of my friend, clear consciousness. Simply by keeping the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu in my mind, I shall be saved from entering into the wombs of many mothers for repeated birth and death. So Prabhupada says within the second paragraph, Maya is both within our consciousness and without. I remember when I was at Vrindavan a few years ago, and one godbrother of my spiritual master, one of Prabhupada's disciples, I said to him, it's easy to be Krishna conscious in Vrindavan because in the West there's so much Maya outside. And then he said, Maya is also inside. So even you can be in Vrindavan, but Maya can enter the consciousness. Right? Maya is always there, inside and outside. Like that. So we have to purify our consciousness. We have to purify the external situations in our life so that Maya cannot enter so much into our consciousness. So we make external adjustments. You know, you do external things, like you blow up your television. Or you give it away. Give the television away, like that, or blow it up, or do whatever you want, or, you know, do practical things. Make some practical, external arrangements so that Maya cannot enter from without. And then from within, you also have to purify the consciousness. Prabhupada says in the purport, he says, one should be not be agitated unnecessarily. Means that we should not let the material world influence us so much. Unnecessarily get upset. Practically every second hour of the day you could get upset with something. You know, some situation comes up and, you know, your wife says something or you say something or, you know, or the boss says something or someone says something. You know, there's always reason to get agitated, but the body has to learn to become detached from it. And Prabhupada says, constantly chant Hare Krishna. Right, constantly absorb yourself in the holy name. Right, become detached from the external and just constantly chant. And that way you can purify your consciousness and fix it on Krishna. And then Prabhupada says in the final paragraph that Krishna consciousness cannot be stopped by any external circumstance. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says this in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Bhakti cannot be stopped by anything external. There is nothing that can stop our bhakti. There's nothing that can stop us from serving Krishna. The only thing which can stop us is us. Just like we gave the example before of the devotees in Russia. Just like that book came out recently called Salted Bread. I haven't read it yet, but I've heard about it, about the devotees in Russia who were persecuted for practicing Krishna consciousness. They were put into jail. Even some devotees were tortured. Even some devotees died. They left their bodies by being mistreated within prison in Russia. But nothing stopped them from giving up their Krishna consciousness. So nothing external can stop our bhakti or our devotion to Krishna. If one actually has devotion, nothing external can stop it. The only thing that stops it is our devotion is not very strong yet, or we allow ourselves to be distracted by Maya. But when we become fixed in devotion, then we can actually attain Krishna. Like that. There's nothing that can stop us from attaining Krishna. Like so we'll stop there, and tomorrow night we'll continue from 22. We'll go to verse 30 or so. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.